Whoa, cool. That Xbox hack worked. I was able to travel through time. Now, just to calm myself and give myself a few choice tips for the next decade.
Hello?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Who is this?
It's me, Craig.
But I'm Craig.
I'm Craig from the future. I've actually come to give you some stock tips and stuff.
But if you're Craig, then who am I?
No, I'm the real Craig. I came from the future to tell you something.
Well, if you're Craig, then who am I?
Look, just forget all that. I'm getting a headache already. Listen, well, there's a couple of things. First, when Yahoo and another company called Google, when they go public, I want you to be there when that happens.
Sure.
That'll set us up. And when you hear this podcasting thing come around, just do the show by yourself and don't worry about a co-host. This guy named Chuck Tomasi, he's a hack.
Chuck. Welcome to Technorama. Tonight's show will be done entirely by a semaphore. You know, those crazy little flags that go over long distances.
What's the charges?
Toll free.
Okay.
Line of sight. This is show number 73 for January 9th, 2005. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi. With me is the man of many talents and criticisms, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I think I'm pretty good.
Where'd you pull that one from, man?
I don't know. Just keep going.
I've been editing all weekend and rearranging the office, so I blame tonight's technical difficulties on the rearrangement of the desk. If you look on the webcam, you'll notice it's a completely different environment, and I feel like I'm driving on the British side of the road or something. It's just all weird.
And you know what's a different lighting? Chuck looks like he's got a 5 o'clock shadow.
Well, to do so. Actually, there's one of three light bulbs just burned out. Light bulbs don't matter on a podcast. Coming up on tonight's show, we've got lots of odds and ends from CES. You know, the ones that we're looking for are the ones that no one else is seeing. We've got part three of our interview with the Woz and lots more cool stuff to feed your inner geek. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Feed me, Seymour.
On this day in tech history for January 9th, 2006. This is January 9th. It's the ninth day in the Gregorian calendar. There are 356 days remaining in 2006. It was on this date in 1793 that Jean-Pierre Blanchard becomes the first to fly in a balloon in the United States. The French Academy of Science announces on this date in 1839 the daguerreotype photography process. The German-born astronomer Caroline Herschel dies on this date in 1848. And it was on this date in 1894, the New England Telephone and Telegraph installs the first battery-operated telephone switchboard in Lexington, Massachusetts. Juan de la Sierva makes the first autogyro flight on this date in 1923. And in 1929, the Seeing Eye is established with the mission to train dogs to assist the blind in Nashville, Tennessee. The first issue of Look magazine goes on sale in the United States on this date in 1937. Also in 1960, construction of the Aswan Dam begins in Egypt. And in 1984, Clara Peller is featured in the Where's the Beef commercial campaign for Wendy's restaurants for the first time. And after losing a patent battle with Polaroid on this date in 1986, Kodak leaves the instant camera business. The Sega Genesis is released on this date in 1989 in New York, New York, and Los Angeles, California. Valery Polyakov completes 366 days in space while aboard the Mir space station on this date in 1995, breaking a duration record. Sun Microsystem announces the formation of JavaSoft on this date in 1996. And in 1999, after nearly 16 years of operation, the Horizons Pavilion at Walt Disney World's Epcot closes permanently. It's raised more than a year later to make way for the new Mission Space attraction. And happy birthday goes out on this date in 1950 to Les Paul, the American guitarist and inventor. And Michael Everson, the American expert in writing systems and Unicode, turns 43 today. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for January 9th, 2006.
Hi, this is Larry.
And this is Paul.
From Paul.com Security Weekly. You can reach us at paul.com.com. That's PAULDOTCOM. .com, your source for IT security news, vulnerabilities, and research.
You're listening to Technorama with Chuck Tomasi and Craig Stepp.
Damn it, Jim. Take me back to the podcast.
Captain, I can't hold it any longer.
I like that.
Hey, is that more Paul or less Paul?
Let's get to listener feedback. We got a lot of stuff in the show to crank through. This is an email from Yorga regarding our SSIDs discussion. He said, the best one I found while war driving was their complete address. I wanted Imagine to go and that. Ring the bell and tell them their Wi-Fi wasn't protected, but I thought better of it.
Nah.
I have seen not default one, too. Not default. It just says NOTDEFAULT. Said, mine is pretty lame, JupiterNet. Some others I've set up, OrionNet, A-Line. I don't know if that should be alien or not. But, and I'm not really inspired with naming them. Well...
Hey, I did find one other day called Black Hole.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Actually, I was kind of scared to get on it. This is your data.
And we got a voicemail from Adam Raymer of Madtown Aces Productions, also the one who did
Adam
our
Raymer.
Gmail podcast, faithful listener. Only when he called, when you call the voice line, it says, please send your fax or leave your message after the tone. That will explain a lot about what he's talking about in this message.
Well, I just want to tell you I feel really inadequate because I don't have a fax to send you, but maybe next time. Anyway, this is Adam from Madtown Aces Audio Productions, fan of the show. I just listened to your this January 30th show. Hold on, I'm driving. Let me call you back. I'm sorry, I still don't have a fax. But anyway, did you miss me?
Yep.
Okay, real quick. As far as your interviews and putting them together, you kind of asked the question. I said January 30th, I meant December 30th. But anyway, not to go on and on, but this is what I think. You guys do two shows a week. So I think you should put one piece in the show on maybe Sunday, put the other piece in the show or in the feed during the week, and then make them back to the Friday show for the last
Wednesday night, Thursday morning.
Anyway, just a thought. Bye.
Well, we appreciate that, and we appreciate the feedback. I'm not really sure how we're going to do the tie-in. We had thought about maybe a highlight or two, just a little smidgen of the interview to wet your taste buds and go get the whole thing.
Well, that's what I was thinking, was just give a highlight reel, and then, Tuesday or Thursday or whenever, or Friday, rather, have it pop out.
Yep, depending on what it is and when it is. We don't want to put it out on the same day or day after as a regular show, because anytime you have two things that come down the same day in iTunes, it usually only picks up the latest and greatest, so you're likely to miss something, and I don't want that to happen to anybody.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to put get excited and put a bunch of things in your feed the same day.
Yep.
Thanks, iTunes.
We do have some news courtesy of Joel McLaughlin. He says, hey, MacRumors.com caught the Apple is going to release iLife 06 next week. You know, I had a suspicion they might do this, and yet this is still a rumor because I'm looking to upgrade my iLife. The iMac G4 has really old software. It's kind of like iPhoto 2 on it. And
I got iLife 05 on my Mac. I actually really like it.
Yeah, I've got 5 on the laptop, too. It's nice. Mm-hmm. Some other, let's see, he said, other rumored additions, something called iWeb, which may be blogging or web design. I don't know if that might plug into your .Mac site, or improvements to GarageBand centered around podcast creation. And it was caught on Apple's own page. Some web monkey either did it unintentionally or maybe not. Unfortunately, the page is already fixed in typical Apple fashion. You know, that's been known to happen before. They leave a web page open just long enough for somebody to get a peek at something.
I think I have a feeling it's either a little viral marketing or the wrath of Steve came down when they when it appeared.
Yeah, could be. Hey, just a quick notice. We will be doing next Sunday night's show rather than at its regular time. We'll be doing it Saturday at noon Central. The reason is I will be recording live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Casa Loma Drive in Appleton, Wisconsin. If you're in the neighborhood, stop on by. Craig will be on a Skype connection. Well, yeah, we'll think.
I'll be there virtually.
We like to pretend you're there. He will be on a Skype connection or Gizmo or whatever we choose at the time. And if you are in the Appleton area, we'd love to see you. Stop in, stop by, have a bite, be a live audience. I'll bring the punch card so you know what to say.
Yeah.
I do want to make this a regular event, maybe once a month. I'm thinking about the second Saturday. We'll see how the first one goes. Buffalo Wild Wings, Casa Loma Drive, Appleton, Saturday, January 14th, 2006, 12 noon.
I'll have my webcam up, and I will have chicken wings on this side, too.
Buffalo wings.
Spicy.
Now, you found a story about a Del Monte sticker thing or other, or did I put this in?
It made its rounds on Dig. It looks like somebody had run some paper through the mint as they were printing money, and there was a Del Monte sticker on there, and the serial number and whatnot's printed on top. I don't know if this is fake or not, but the serial number and everything's printed above the sticker, so you can visually see the emblem, the seal, and whatnot, but it's over on top of that sticker, so it actually. The way it looks is that sticker went through the production process as it, you know, got printed. So it went on to be bid. Somebody found it and actually put it up for bid. And I think it had like $20,000 or something like that is what they bid on it. It's crazy.
The sticker is in the paper?
No, it's like the sticker was on the paper before it went through the printing process. So the serial number and the word 20 and whatnot is printed above, you know, on top. I'm sorry, not the word 20 because that's part of the paper, but the serial number and stuff is printed on the sticker itself.
But the paper is made of cloth. It's mostly cotton.
Yes.
So how would a sticker get in there?
I don't know. Somebody put it on there. Somebody put it on the paper. It's actually above the paper. You know, if you think about it in 3D, it's above the paper. But when it went through the printing process, the serial number runs across the Del Monte sticker, it's like a banana sticker.
Call me skeptical, but I don't believe that one based on what I've seen on the Discovery Channel about the U.S. Treasury and how many inspections and things this money goes through. That's just me.
Well, I mean, I'd assume they had to find it, but I don't know. Click on that link and look at it. It's mind blowing.
I will look after the show.
Yeah.
Do you know what this sound is? Do you know what that sound is, Craig?
I think it's you playing on the dot matrix printer.
No, not the dot matrix. That's a ScanJet. That's an HP ScanJet. There's a hidden cookie in there that will allow you to play music. If you send it like a note and a duration of how long you want it to play, you can play songs like Fur Elise on your ScanJet. We'll have a link in the show notes. My coworker Greg checked this out, and it's for real. HP has a reference to the PDF on their site. Is that just mind-blowing or what?
It is pretty cool.
And speaking of scanners...
Yes. I found a link on Hackaday, or via Hackaday. It was a link to how to make your optical mouse into a scanner. Because, you know, it's got a little CCD on the bottom that scans, you know, every so many frames a second as you're moving your mouse. Well, this guy took it, makes a pinout for the USB connector to go to the printer port. He has some software which you can download off the site. So if you make this little quick cable, you can actually use it to scan whatever it's looking at on the desk.
You know what that reminds me of?
What's that?
When you look at the images of what he scanned, he had like a document and he's got several letters up on the screen. It looks like you can make your own Dead Sea Scrolls. It did. It was all kind of patchy and pieces were missing.
It was a receipt, and he was like moving the thing around. Yeah, it looks kind of funny because it looks skewed. But hey, you know, something fun to do.
I thought
it was cool.
Hey, it's the Dead Sea Scrolls, you new modern technology for
<Yeah. laughs> Hey, well, you have to admit that's pretty clever for him to find that out. Man. That's pretty cool.
Now, this week was CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and several things caught our eyes. These are, some of them are just neat gadgets, some of them are just strange and obscure. That's the kind of thing we thrive on around here.
Yeah, I've been kind of following it closely because I think I love these kind of gadgets. Especially the ones they try to pimp, you know, something new, hot, coming down the line type thing. Well, between Engadget and Gizmodo, I think they had about the whole show covered. So if you ever watched those two sites, Gizmodo.com and Engadget, I mean, there was blog posts every 10 minutes, every 2 minutes, it seemed like. The first one was a displayless eye care cell phone type unit. It looks like about the size of a thumb drive. It has a phone, like a hang-up button and a call button.
Is it voice dialing?
It is voice dialing.
Okay, because that's the only thing I didn't see unless there was some touchpad on the other side.
Yeah, there's nothing. You basically give it voice commands and it makes calls. And I think, from what I understand, I'm a little fuzzy on this because there's not much detail, but I think you can actually do like, you know, the Nextel phones where you have the walkie-talkie two-way?
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. If nobody was responding to the phone, you can call it.
Did it say much?
No, I don't think there was a price. I don't see it listed here.
I didn't see that either. And the availability was March on that one, if I remember right.
Let's see. I don't even see a date. I have to go look at
I had read like three or four of these in a row, so I may have them mixed up.
Yeah, we'll check into that one. And the next one I had on my list was the hands-on with the IC360i. It's like a backpack unit you stick on your iPod.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth gen, not necessarily the fifth gen, and it gives you video capability on a larger screen on the back of it.
Well, from what I read, it said nano, third gen, fourth gen, and fifth gen.
I think anything with a dock connector.
Yep.
But see, here's the thing. I don't quite understand, and I'm sure there's ways around this, but you know, the fourth gen, iTunes thinks it's incompatible with video.
Unless it's a photo.
I can't copy it. None of my fourth gen, my mono one.
No, I wonder if they meant to say iPod Photo instead of fourth gen. I don't know, speculation.
But at any rate, it looks kind of cool. It, of course, makes the size bigger.
But it was expensive. It was like $150 or...
No, $249.
$249, yeah, to make your
bucks,
video
I've been,
a little bigger.
I've been like, $100, I'd have gone and got it. $249, I think, is a little steep, but it's a nice big screen on the back. And you can put your nano in. They have a picture of him sticking a nano in there.
And the next one is TimeTrax's Pop Catcher. It records radio. This is kind of interesting because you plug this thing in, and unlike my iRiver where I can record FM radio, it just makes one big honking MP3 out of the whole thing. This will literally sample the radio. If you turn it on and let it go for an hour, you'll have 12 songs or however many they play on the radio. And it will put them into discrete MP3s, which I thought was pretty slick.
Yeah. So there's some technology already out there to sample MP3s and identify them.
The RIAA is going to be all over this one.
Yeah, as soon as they announced it at CES, I could hear the RIAA alarm bells going off, the klaxons going off in the RIAA offices.
Terrific. They'll have DJs talking over the whole song now.
Yeah, but I thought that was pretty cool. I'm sorry, I was just looking to see if they had a... I don't see a time or anything on that that mobile phone thing, so anyway, we'll get back to that. And you know what else I saw through several devices, including the screen reader, like an e-book reader, mm-hmm. was e-ink seems to be everywhere.
Explain to me what e-ink is.
E-ink is a technology much like a... like an LCD or something like that, but it doesn't have any backlit. So you can basically print things onto this paperless device or screen.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require power. So whatever you put on there, it stays on there even when the power is removed. So there's no backlit. It's very easy to read because it looks like paper, but it's, you know, like a screen or a device. And you can cut it down to different sizes and use it. And a lot of thumb drives were using that as displays to show how much capacity was left on the device. Because you don't have any power on these thumb drives, or you don't want to.
Right.
Have to rely on a battery. So that's what e-ink is like. Like I said, it's a technology to make something look printed and very easy to read. At the same time, it doesn't require power and it's stateless, so it'll stay there whatever you stick on it.
Hmm.
So that's all SD cards, thumb drives, all kinds of devices like that. And they're glowing reports of Sony and their ebook reader. And from the pictures that I saw, it looked really cool. And it'll read non-DRM'd PDFs. There's a Word doc converter, things like that. And it will read things with DRM as well, but that was the big point, was that you can throw anything on it. And it had support for RSS feeds with images. So that right there would be your electronic mobile newspaper.
Hmm. And speaking of mobile reading, Sony mm-hmm. and their ebook reader?
That's what I was just talking about, Chuck.
You slipped in the next bullet item while I was making a note to go back and check the earlier part of the show. I think I left the mic up.
Okay, once again, Chuck's not listening to me.
I was.
All right, listen, tomorrow morning you can listen to it and catch up on what I said.
Excellent. So, edit that part out when we see if we left the mic up.
Yeah. And the next thing was Engadget had pointed out that there was a house. It was like the future house, and they put all
this looked funny.
Yeah, they put all the electronics in there, all these cool devices, and people were going in and out, but the thing didn't have an air conditioner. All it had was like this two fan inserts you put in a window sill.
Yeah, definitely a demo house, and they didn't spring for the air conditioning.
Yeah.
They said, we're not even going to wait in the hour-long line. We've seen enough. There's little fans in the window. Pff, forget it. We're not going in.
Yeah. Now, this last one I thought was kind of funny. This is from Gizmodo. And we've seen this guy before. Remember we talked about the Atom Technologies? They had some kind of special chips for your laptops to replace hard drives and all that. Well, they said he's been there for years. And the guy says he's calling BS on it. But the guy had devices there, but he doesn't really let anybody look at them and use them to verify it.
Well, they looked like little CF2 cards that were labeled with 1 and 2 terabytes of storage.
That's what they said. And then later on, after they posted this, they revised the article and then said, okay, maybe this guy is for real. He's got some kind of certifications for this stuff. But I don't know. I mean, you'd think if you could get a 2 terabyte, I'm talking 2 terabyte.
That's 2,000 gigabytes.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they be? He'd be selling. He should be retired in the Caymans somewhere. You think they would be using these instead of laptops or hard drives and laptops?
Laptops. How about servers? Start raiding a few of those together.
Yeah, I'm sure it's expensive, but still, if you can make a 2 terabyte, give me a 500 gigabyte.
Yep.
I don't care.
So, I'm not picky. I'll take a huger store than what I've got.
Yeah. But he's got his later on down. He's got SD cards and some other pictures of stuff, and it looks amazing. You know, it looks legit, but you know, I don't know.
All right, let's roll into part three of our Woz interview. Yeah, I do it like before.
Was that?
Come on in, Steve. Have a seat. Craig's got a couple of questions for you.
Yeah. I've been a personal fan of yours for quite some time, and I remember a long time ago, and I haven't heard you talk about this, and I don't know that you can, but I know you had a plane crash at one point, right? Like a personal craft?
Oh, yes, I did.
And you had amnesia problem after that, or for a while?
Yeah, and so for 5 weeks, I didn't realize any time was passing, and then when I finally realized that I'd been out of work for 5 weeks from Apple, that's when I realized it was my one chance to go back to college, which I did. And get my degree.
Oh, that's the tie-in.
Yes, and the instant I came out of amnesia, I think the 5 minutes I was coming out of it, I realized that that's what I was going to do, was instead of going back to Apple, I was going to go to college and get my degree. And I even got the degree in the fake name that I went under.
Are you allowed to divulge that fake name?
Of course. Rocky Raccoon Clark. Berkeley, 1986.
I love it.
That's awesome. I had a friend who hit his head really bad one time, and you couldn't see he was physically hurt, but it was funny because we had been friends for several years, and all of a sudden he barely remembered my first from the last month, you know, previous, and it was like, it was kind of weird. And remember when that happened, the first thing I thought of was this little article I read of you when you had that problem.
No, but if you forget things in the past, that's called retrograde amnesia. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I had. What I had is often called short-term memory problem, but really there's no problem at all with your short-term memory. The fact is you could hold thoughts in your head and discuss something with somebody and remember what you're talking about through a conversation, but maybe about 10 minutes later, that short-term memory never got turned into a permanent long-term memory. It's mm-hmm. really a long-term memory problem. So the person walks back in the room and you don't remember you saw them before because you don't have a working long-term memory. Well, actually, it's the path from short-term to long-term that got intercepted. This is common after car crashes and airplane crashes, especially when there's a lesion near the hippocampus.
Head injuries are scary things. I've known a few people like that too.
Yeah,
and I saw one on a Segway hit a head and she couldn't answer questions for a week. I mean, boy, I'll tell you, I believe in helmets on bikes and even Segways.
It's crazy what we used to get away with.
I know. You know what? You fall, and you land on your feet. You fall, and you stop yourself with your hands. And every once in a while, you fall in a way that you can't quite stop your head from hitting.
That's true.
Boy, one guy got killed just falling on a Segway. Stupid little slow Segway, but he hit his head on a curb. Mm-hmm. And you can't really protect where your head's going to go.
Ooh. Well, what did you like best about working at Apple?
Well, that's almost impossible to say, since I kind of originally started it and was the sole engineer and key to everything for even the first year, 2 years. It was just sort of like almost my own little community. I was a little special person. I refused to go into, you know, high-level management, board-type stuff. I wanted to stay at the bottom of the org chart and just keep working on engineering projects, come up with ideas for hardware or software or, you know, improvements in an existing product. And it was just fun getting used to all the people at that level, the technicians and the engineers and the assistants. We even called them secretaries when we first started Apple. Just, you know, having a sort of a family of friends around you. It's something that goes away a bit when you get a real big company and you get more formalized over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's why I like every once in a while, maybe going off doing something new in a new little startup, you got a whole new family.
Do you ever get a kick out of, just glancing around you or taking it in at some point and looking at all the computers around and going, I helped kickstart that?
I used to hate that thought, the fact that people talk that way. But just in recent years, I'm starting to realize that there were some of the things I look way, way back. Some of the things I did were very important steps for computers, you know, taking them from not something people would accept as owning on their own to something they would accept. And Steve Jobs had a very important role in that, too. Just the way you present a picture and the way you think about it, the way you talk about it, you know, understanding the psychology of the people who would be using it. But for me, I was doing what I was normally doing. And the reason I did things that were very different than other people were doing was accidental. I had had so much history, even building my own little hobby computer with 256 bytes of RAM, like the Altair. It was just like an Altair with switches and lights. I had built my own 5 years before the Altair. So what happened was you always kind of move forward in life to newer stages based on what you've thought about your last project, what you've learned. So when it came time to build a computer again, of course, it was natural for me to think of build it like a typewriter. Don't have a front panel of switches with all these wires going down to chips on a board and all these big, huge hardware sockets you got to mount things on. Mm-hmm. Just use a human keyboard like a typewriter and set up and write a little program. The program is in ROM, and it just reads the keyboard to do what that front panel would have done. And that was really a key step because it really, from that day on, there wasn't a single computer that came out that said small computers are going to be anything other than have a human keyboard and a video display. And that was the first one, the Apple I. The Apple II, of course, took, you know, huge dramatic steps to making a great computer. But all those steps to combined, you know, color, graphics, high res and all that, computer can be a fun device too. Those were things that I worked out especially for the Apple II, but they only add up to the same importance of the Apple I moving towards a keyboard. You know, I'm glad I did it. Now, of course, somebody else would have done it. You know, it would have become obvious after a while. I mean, we had calculators with human keyboards too.
Right.
So, all I could really technically say is it was I accelerated things, but, you know, somebody has to get out there and do a good enough job at something, the Apple II being that product, to really spur the world on to seeing those you know, excellent ways that were coming from wherever. Mm-hmm. And recognize it, and I'm glad that, especially to bring in the games and the fun to computers, so much that I did on the Apple II was aimed at making it a good gameplay and machine.
Oh, my kids still love it.
Yeah, and I talk to people in game companies frequently wherever I go, and they almost all talk about how they would program their Apple II, and that was their start, and it inspired them, and now they run game companies.
The way you talk about the way things were back there, you really sound like it had to have been an exciting time, I know. You sound like
every day was exciting because we thought we were onto a revolution. We had such a much better product than even our early competitors, Commodore and Radio Shack, because our machine had so many more features, but we sold it for more. And the secret is it actually cost less to build. But we sold it for more because it was better, and we wanted high profits in order to build a large company. Mm-hmm. And lucky we had such a good product.
Yep. I helped my one of my friends and his dad, they were putting together an Apple. I think it came like in a Heath kit or something like that. And I just remember that was the most fun I've ever had, you know, doing something like that. And I can only imagine what it would be like building it from scratch, you know.
Well, building from scratch is good for the sort of person it's going to make you in life. I mean, I was in ham radio when I had to build my own ham radio by scratch in sixth grade. And those many science fair projects were just huge, huge weeks and weeks of work, not just one night or two nights, weeks and weeks of work to build something huge. And that's good training to get used to building real complete products that are complete and really do something totally on their own and not just a little part of something. I'm not a theoretical type person. I'm a practical type engineer. I want something that actually works and does something when I'm done and not to just prove a little tiny point that I can do this one part of a circuit great and somebody else can maybe make something out of it. I'd rather build something that I can use myself with my own hands.
Well, that's where you and Steve Jobs got together. I mean, got along so well, I guess, because yin and yang type personalities.
I don't think so at all. I think we got along. And, yeah, especially in our days when we were best friends. It was just we got along. We agreed on top. We loved to talk technology, both of us, and he would think way out in the future. You know, what was coming in chips, and could you take a microprocessor and turn it into a computer that could replace the mini computers and the mainframes that were used as time-sharing machines that were sold to people for money? And pretty much every time I designed something, he wanted to sell it. See, that's where we started splitting. I wanted to just build things and design them because I enjoyed being clever in my designs, and he wanted to make money out of everything. But we had common interests in music, going to concerts. We just drive together and talk for hours. And so we were not it wasn't really yin and yang at all.
Well, I was thinking more like he would be more the aesthetics type thing, and you would be more of the.
As we started Apple for real, when we became the real company, not the partnership with the Apple I in the garage, but as we moved towards the Apple II, he started talking to Mike Markla and being more into things, including aesthetics, but a lot more than that. It was really just the whole idea of what part will a computer play in persons' lives in their home. We didn't really see the business market at that time, really. We focused, the home market was going to make Apple a big, huge company. But Steve, yeah, so, and he also just had, you know, this foresight that some people had done great things to build great companies, and he always wanted to be one of them. And boy, any problem that there was, he'd get on a phone and find ways to solve it. It wasn't, you know, like, oh, there's a problem. Well, we just got to live with it and back off. No, let's try this other route. Let's try talking them into this. Let's see if we can scour up some parts in a different part of the world.
I kind of get the feeling that's what goes on.
But it's that kind of energy, that kind of energy to really do the whole company thing. A company needs more than just a computer engineer. I did all the engineering and design, hardware and software. But a company needs, you know, to be able to actually manufacture things and to find sales and to convince people to buy them and all that. You know, we were really blessed too because the press, you know, the word computer was a magic word because it had always meant something no person could own. And here were a bunch of companies with small computers and Apple particularly saying, here's a computer you can own and have fun with. And God, the press just loved it. That we must have had a few years of, you know, amount of press that, I mean, you couldn't have bought with all the trillions of dollars in the world for publicity purposes.
I'm Patrick Norton from DL.TV and Twit, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Hi, Joe McLaughlin here. And if you're wondering what it's like to live in Ohio, what there is to do in Ohio, what bands are from Ohio, and whatever else I decide to put in the show, please tune in to the Life in Ohio podcast at http://lifeinohio.libsyn.com/RSS.
Well, thank you very much, Joel. That's the Joel that gave us that Apple Insider or Mac Rumors information earlier.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
So he's got his own podcast. We've inspired another one. Come to the dark side.
You will come to the dark side. I am your pod father.
Ooh. No. Want to give a quick shout out to those in the chat room right now. We've got Mad Marv, Jadoom. Still don't even know if I'm close on that name or not. Jeep and Dave, Tim Elliott from Indiana, and Mark Shepard, of course. Earlier we had Norbert from the NorbTech podcast in there. But he seems to have departed.
Oh, man.
Bugged out on us. So, welcome to the chat room. If you're around on Sunday nights or Wednesday nights, that's mostly U.S. time. We usually start recording around 8:30, barring any technical difficulties, like tonight.
Yes.
The webcam's running and the chat room's there. Mark is our chat room, what do you call him? Maitre d'? No, that'd be a restaurant.
Hoster.
Yeah.
He's the hostess with the mostest.
Sure, I'd love to hear that.
Hey, if you had seen the webcam tonight, you can probably read his lips and find all the obscenities because we've had the technical difficulties tonight.
It's partly desk. It's partly my fault. It's partly Skype. They're ganging up on us tonight. Hey, I've got one more installment. Not the final installment, but one more installment of How to Destroy the Earth. We're going to wrap this up pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to our series in How to Destroy the Earth. This week, number 7 in our series as we count down to number 1, blown up by a matter-antimatter reaction. What you'll need for this project is 2.5 trillion tons of antimatter. Antimatter, the most explosive substance possible, can be manufactured in small quantities by using any large particle accelerator. But this will take some considerable time to produce with the required amounts. If you can create the appropriate machinery, it may be possible and much easier simply to flip 2.5 trillion tons of matter through a fourth dimension, turning it all into antimatter at once. The method for this is quite simple. This involves detonating a bomb so big that it blasts the Earth to pieces. How hard is that? The gravitational binding energy of the planet of mass M and radius R is, if you do the lengthy calculations, given by the formula E equals 3/5 gm squared divided by R. For the Earth, that works out to roughly 24 times 10 to a whole lot of joules. The sun takes nearly a week to output all that much energy. Think about that. To liberate that much energy requires the complete annihilation of around 2.5 trillion tons of antimatter. That's assuming zero energy loss to heat and radiation, which is unlikely to be the case in reality. You'll probably need to up the dose by at least a factor of 10. Once you've generated your antimatter, probably in space, just launch it en masse towards the Earth. The resulting release of energy, obeying Einstein's famous mass-energy equation E equals mc squared, should be sufficient to split the Earth into 1,000 pieces. Earth's final resting place after this is all completed, a second asteroid belt around the sun. Congratulations! I had a lot of fun recording that one for some reason.
You're scaring me, Chuck.
Sounded like I knew what I was talking about until I went 2 times 10 of the whole lot of joules. There were like 17 or 20 zeros after that. I couldn't even count them that fast.
Duplexed.
All right, one quick Geek Thoughts and then we'll wrap it up.
Geek Thoughts.
Unix is basically a simple operating system, but you have to be a genius to understand the simplicity. Or a simpleton. No.
Like me.
I called the way Unix. L-S, I can spell that. Hey, don't forget the live show next week. Appleton, Buffalo Wild Wings, Casa Loma Drive, Saturday, January 14th, noon. Be there, be square, fly in if you want. This is no podcast expo or a huge gathering, but if you're in the neighborhood, I know we have a number of Appleton listeners, and I'll be spreading the word. Hope to see you there.
Hey, you know what? I was just thinking maybe not this one, but next one, I may try to be live somewhere here in my hometown or Charlotte or something like that.
With the recording skills you've got, I'm not sure I believe you're live anywhere. You'd be going like this on your chest. I'm here in the weathercopter flying above I-75.
Yeah. Too bad 75 doesn't come around here.
We're a little off course. This was supposed to be a 3-hour tour.
But I'm on some strange island and I can still Skype in, right?
Right, using coconut shells.
Oh, man.
Take us out.
All right. Well, you can call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. You can email me. That's K-R-E-G at chuckchat.com. You can email chuck at chuckchat.com. And send audio comments to chuckchat@gmail.com. There's a lot of Chucks in here. Let me just tell you right up front.
Chuck, Chuck, Chuck. You can email. Chuck, 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 Chuck,
Chuck. Tossie is a geek. Chuck, 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 Chuck. Anyway, visit our website at chuckchat.com for all the links to forums, swags, mails, lists, and stuff like that.
Frapper map.
Our show notes and all that good stuff. And that's about it. Oh, and don't forget, it's coming down. It's coming soon. My personal podcast.
Yep.
I'll announce it here soon. You'll know first.
Yep. Any parting words of wisdom?
Yeah, if you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach him how to fish, and he can live a long time with all that personal information he gathers.
I like it. As always, we want to thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. If you're not subscribing, consider joining up. It'll do the numbers good. Take care. Until next time, big binary high five.
101 out.
Houston, we have a problem.